Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 400. Yes, this is the quadricentennial episode of the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully everybody out there is ready for a nice, fun episode. We have a lot of really cool, really great content lined up for you. I think I've talked about this before, but I don't consider the fact that this is the 400th episode a huge deal. I mean, I'm really, really proud of the fact that we got up this far, and I have a couple stats that I'm going to talk to you about in a little bit. But I'm more proud of the fact that it's been that the podcast has actually been on the air for 4 years, or on the internet for 4 years rather. It's kind of a weird thing, because I mean, if you're doing a daily show, you're going to hit 400 episodes, you know, just after a year. If you're doing a bi-weekly show, it takes roughly 4 years. So it took us a little while to actually settle in on the format that we were going to end up using for the Caffeination. So that's why we are the way we are today. That's why we are, and that's where we are. And hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got coming to you today. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other fine episodes and fine folks over at techpodcast.com have all agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. It's a great place to browse around, find some new and wonderful content to just help you through your commute. I mean, nobody likes driving, you know? The Caffeination has really been blessed by the support from the Tech Podcast Network. They really do good work over there, and it's a really good group of people to even just to sound ideas off of, to work through problems. So if you have a tech show and you'd like to join up with a group, it's a really good group of people over there. So I highly suggest you head on over there and check that out. This podcast has been lovingly hosted over at www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com. We've been lovingly hosted over there since since April of 2006. So it took a couple episodes before I actually figured out that, you know, hey, I should probably register a domain name for this thing. See how far it takes me. So there's a couple more stats that we're going to go over, and little bits of information that we're going to hit up and go over in a little bit. But so if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw my general direction, please feel free to do so at caffeination@gmail.com. We have a packed show tonight. We have the standard geek cruft and food and caffeinated bits. We are not going to bore you with too many with too many other things up first. It's been kind of an interesting weekend, as per usual. There is no other kind around here at the Caffeination Lair, so we did want to make mention of the fact that the Caffeination has been sponsored by GoToMeeting for quite some time now, rather. We've actually been sponsored by GoToMeeting since episode 68. They are a fantastic company to work with. They're a fantastic product to represent. We are happy to have had them as a sponsor for all that time. With inclement weather sweeping the nation, it's either raining or snowing, or it's incredibly cold outside. Who wants to run across town or get on an almost certainly delayed flight just for a tiny meeting? You can skip the flight, you can skip the drive, put down the scarf. Use GoToMeeting to host your meeting online instead. It couldn't be simpler. Everyone just logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen shows up on their monitors. There's no delays, no canceled flight, just productive meetings. Imagine that, an actually productive meeting with no irritating downtime in between. Think about it, one click and no snow days, and you could be hosting your own training session or giving product demos from your warm office. You too can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. for a free 30-day trial. All right, wanted to give you a couple little interesting fun facts. Even though this is episode number 400, there have been 416 episodes and announcements and little quick blips that have ever appeared on the Caffeination show and stream. If you downloaded every single episode of the Caffeination podcast, it would encompass roughly 8.6 gigs on your hard drive. If you attempted to listen to every single episode of the Caffeination podcast, that would take you 10 days, 15 hours, 31 minutes and some odd seconds. And that's before I even finish this one. And since, you know, the podcasts usually run about 35 minutes, you can strap that up to 10 days and 16 hours of talk time with just my dulcet tones to entertain you, hopefully. The Caffeination originally was a music and technology and coffee podcast, but my taste in music didn't seem to jive with a whole lot of other people's, and around episode 220, we actually permanently dropped the music. That's one of the only things I honestly regret about the show. I really wish that I had kind of stuck with the music format, but it didn't seem to jive with the rest. So it's quite possible that the music format might end up coming back in a different show. There have been over 200,000 downloads of the Caffeination podcast. That is a number that I'm incredibly proud of, and it's also unfortunately and tragically flawed because I don't know how many downloads exactly, because the Caffeination originally debuted on a network called Podomatic, and Podomatic was fantastic. We were one of the highest rated tech shows within the first 3 months that we were out there. We were consistently in the top 10 by the time I left. I left Podomatic around episode, I think, 82. That's when we finally got all the stuff out and moved away, and it was an amicable split, but it was just a little bit irritating. Here's a quick little timeline of how things went down here at the podcast. Episode 001 debuted on the 9th of January 2006. The caffeination.com didn't come around until episode 18. Episode 21 is the first time that I ever announced the Adopt a Noob contest. It's also the first episode that was ever part of the Tech Podcast Network, so anything before episode 21 quite possibly still has some naughty language in it. Everything after that has been child safe and family friendly. Episode 24 is the first time that you ever heard my wonderful pipes coming through the venerable Samsung C01 studio condenser microphone and the Samsung MDR624 mixer that have ever since championed the Caffeination podcast. They were a birthday present for my then 26th birthday from my parents. So they said, hey, here, what are you into now? And I said, you know, hey, I'm trying this podcasting thing out. And they said, what would you like for your birthday? I was like, I'd really like a mic. And this is the mic that I got, the whole nine yards. So it's been kind of fun, and it's been a very a good purchase since. Just a couple quick more little things. Episode 60 of the podcast, around June of 2006, is when somebody told me that after my son was born, I would never produce another episode. This is Paul Jr. actually debuted on episode 68, which is also the first episode that ever had a sponsor. And after 1 year of being on the air, that was episode 95. So it's been a long and winding road, and as the Grateful Dead said, what a long, strange trip it's been. But I gotta tell you, I could not have been happier with how long we've been on the air, how much of a wonderful following that we have here at the podcast. And I'd just like to thank every single person who's ever listened and everybody who's ever taken a moment of their time to comment, link, or do anything to the Caffeination. Thank you ever so much. Even the people who've ripped on it, the people who don't like certain things, like this long extended little overture that we have for you here on the podcast today. You know, even the people who don't like those, everybody, you know, this show is what it is because of feedback and because of kind trying to find a happy medium throughout. So thank you ever so much. And now on to the news. All right, we have the Geek Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Charity has its pitfalls. Wyclef Jean's charity, Yele, has actually has some suspect charges on their record. It's the only way to really boil it down. Now, the smokinggun.com has actually unearthed a series of rather systematic problems with Wyclef's charity, and he was one of the spearheaders for actually getting the mobile payment method for actually donating to the Haitian relief fund. And there's been a couple instances where people have said, okay, well, you know, there's been $400,000 paid in rent to a building that was actually owned by Wyclef and somebody else who's in the band, and then there's there's a whole bunch of other issues that have been over through and throughout the history of the charity. In fact, there have been multiple times, the Smoking Gun recently found out that there have been over, I think, six or seven times where the foundation, the actual incorporated foundation of Yele or whatever it was, which was the originally, it was originally entitled the Wyclef Jean Foundation for Haitian Relief or something like that. Since their inception back in 2004, they have been suspended as a corporation for six times. And one of the suspensions, you know, just because they didn't file the proper tax documentation. So this is enough to give a lot of people pause about actually donating their hard-earned money there. It's kind of like a lot of people I know actually have issues with donating money to the Red Cross, not because they don't believe in the mission of the Red Cross or anything like that, but rather they don't want to end up supporting the overhead of the Red Cross. And I forget the figures, but somebody once said it was something like 40% of the money that is donated to the Red Cross goes to their overhead. I don't know if this is true, and I'm still trying to find, you know, an accurate representation of that. And if that's the case, then, you know, you need to have an accounting of that. And there is no way where, there's usually not a charity where 100% of any donation goes to anything. One of the few exceptions to this is the Child's Play charity run by the guys over at Penny Arcade. They actually run it as a loss to themselves in order to get what they want done. And I'm pretty sure if they ever got up above a certain threshold, they would have to change that. There would have to be something else besides, yeah, how it's currently run to actually work and function. You know, charities of a certain size, especially relief organizations, have overhead. It's just unfortunately a nature of the beast. The next little thing that we have for you here is Wyclef actually responds via YouTube to the allegations. So if you have the time, you can head on over there and actually, you know, watch his response. I didn't get a chance because for some reason the video was down a little bit earlier today, but it's basically just, you know, overall this entire thing is a kind of a call to arms to say that, you know, you need to do your research before you just donate blindly to anything. You need to do your research and determine where your money would be best spent and how much it would actually help. I had a lot of people actually ask me, it's like, well, okay, well, if you donate money directly to the Haitian Relief Fund, is that going to really help the people on the ground right now, or is it going to, you know, help them eventually? Because, you know, immediate help is kind of needed, and I don't have an answer for that. So I think it's something you have to decide for yourself. So if you support the Red Cross so much, you know, and their overhead, and you think that their overhead is actually a necessary evil in the way that they do business, then feel free to text Haiti to like 909999. I think it's 90 and then 49s or 39s. I'm not sure, but there's a whole bunch of, you know, you just do a search for Red Cross Haiti and they're online, and you'll get the correct code to donate to. But it actually withdraws $10, and there's a lot of really good posts going around, a lot of really good comments, which are basically saying, it's like, even when you donate $10 to, you know, the Red Cross or something like that, your service provider's taking a cut of that, other people are taking a cut of that. If you donate via PayPal, they're still getting their fees. So there's a lot of necessary evils, and you just want the money to go to as much as possible to where it's supposed to go. All right, so on to something a little bit less serious, but Boston has actually garnered the support of a potential Arcology. Now, if you've ever played SimCity 2000, Arcologies were kind of the endgame solution where entire cities could technically live inside one giant floor plan. And the way that the Boston one actually looks is it looks like a couple of Roman numerals all kind of mashed together, and when you're looking at it scale wise against some of the other buildings in the city, it looks twice as high as any of the other buildings. This thing is insane. I mean, it of course it conforms to all of the different engineering specifications and everything. There's just a lot of other things that when you're looking at it, you're like, okay, as a scale piece sitting next to the regular city of Boston, it looks kind of ridiculous because it's so much bigger, so much more massive, and so much heavier visually that I can't ever see anybody actually designing one of these. So I just wanted to kind of share it with the group because I thought it was interesting, and it's an interesting study in where culture could end up going. All right, next little story we got for you here is completely simple. It says, nothing can stop D&D geeks from frolicking with a D20 beach ball. From over at nerdapproved.com, you too can get your very very own beach ball that actually looks like a giant D20. That's a 20-sided die. It's only $12 from theawesomer.com, and the only thing that can stop a geek with a D&D or with a D20 beach ball is actually a failed roll for initiative or a complete lack of sunscreen, because you're pretty sure that these people aren't spending a lot of time outside. And as somebody who used to play D&D quite a bit, I will vouch for all of those assumptions, no matter how damaging they may end up being. All right, from one form of geekery to another, a little bit of nostalgia for people approximately my age, Eternia lives on in a He-Man art show. If you ever saw any of the old He-Man figures from the 1980s, there's an entire pantheon of different people that existed within that world, and when upon repeat viewing, the show itself is kind of really weird, as a lot of kids' shows are when you try and watch them again. But this art gallery has pieces of all different kinds of different interpretations of the people who actually dwell within Eternia. I love the one gate that they actually have up there, which is actually kind of like a morphed piece of Castle Grayskull. They have all kinds of different things. They have everything from different figurines. I actually have two He-Man figures left. The one is kind of cobbled together from two other ones, and the other one is Stinkor, the giant skunk. And yes, he still smells after all these years. But they have things like an emo princess. They have She-Ra. They have all other kinds of strange bits of popular art and how they were kind of shifted into a He-Man and Eternia kind of a way. So you can either buy, you know, limited edition prints or go over there and check them out. So some of them are relatively interesting. Some of them really are kind of sad. I think the most disturbing of all of them is a composition by Johnny Sampson. It's called Cosmo Skeletor. It's actually Skeletor kind of laying across a bearskin rug. Well, not really bearskin. It's the Battle Cat rug, but still. Next little thing that we got up for you here is an interesting printable poster for your walls. It's from over at the makezine.com. It's a printable nuclear reactor wall chart. So you too can have your very own deconstructed version of a nuclear reactor printed out and up on your wall. Just for a process piece, I think it's relatively cool, and it's a relatively beautiful illustration, so I wanted to kind of share it with the group. I'm trying to figure out exactly how big it is, because I do have a plotter, and this is the kind of thing where, you know, I could plot it out and put it up on my wall, and I think it would really kind of fit in there. There's a whole bunch of other reactors and things like that that are actually on the website that you can check out and go through. So they said they're very, very, very large versions, but I kind of really like it. They have all kinds of different ones. They have the Super Phoenix, the Reactor Number 68, the Snups, the Fulton, the Candu, the Douglas Point BWR-6, and the Grand Gulf. If they have one for Three Mile Island, whatever that one ended up being, I think I'd probably print that one just because of the proximity for the caffeination layer to the actual Three Mile Island. I thought it would be interesting to play around with that. All right, moving right along, the next little link that we have for you here is something called Soft Maps. It's a little bit of quilted cartography. This is something that I had never thought of before, but it's a way of actually showing maps based on quilting into a large blanket. So you can actually, you know, it's like 7th Avenue is like hand-stitched in. They have all the different topographical and cartographical lines on there. I'm probably mispronouncing words all over. So it's a little bit of an infographic. It's a little bit of a funny thing. I definitely think that I would love to have Philadelphia, just like the entire city street maps, quilted out as a blanket for the layer. So I think it's beautiful. And I think it's really kind of long overdue, because this is one of those things where it's like you really want to smack yourself on the forehead and say, you know, that is such a brilliant idea. I can't believe nobody had come up with it before. And maybe, you know, maybe nobody, or maybe somebody else had. I just didn't get a chance to check it out. All right, there's another little product that's out there that's really kind of smack yourself in the forehead simple as well, except this one is replicatable, which is something that I really like. They're basically selling a giant metal ruler that's 12 inches long, 31 centimeters, and along with this ruler, which can be used as a straight edge, used as a ruler, used to measure things, imagine that, there's actually two magnetic circles, and they've realized that 12 inches are, you know, the months of the year, and then 31 is the number of days that are the maximum number of days that are in any month, so you can make your own calendar on this. And I thought that was an interesting, kind of cool. But I was like, you know what? There's probably an easier way to do this. And you could probably just take one of the magnetic poetry things and put like an underline or a blank piece under what month you were on. And do the same thing for what day you were on. In fact, not only that, but you could kind of extrapolate it out there and actually turn the front of your fridge into a little bit of a ruler and, you know, you have, you know, 1 through 12 and put the magnets on the month and actually mark days and have what's supposed to go on during them using the magnetic poetry as well. So, I mean, I don't really think I'd spend $24 for a metal ruler. I have enough of them. I think I might have to go out and find some small magnets, though, if I don't have any of the magnetic poetry stuff laying around. All right, and another piece of design simplicity, a repot. It's a flower pot or plant repotting made easy. This is another thing where it's like, I don't know if they have any of these before, but this is basically a split flower pot. Now, I'm not sure how this works with water and how, and you know, plants that need a lot of water and how, you know, whether or not water would actually seep out through the cracks. But when it comes time to repot a plant, the way that you do it with this is you actually disengage a locking mechanism. You pull them apart and the clob of dirt is actually left in the middle. This is beautiful. This is really, really a simple concept, and it's actually they've actually made different prototypes. They're called Smarty Pants for your plants. I love this. I think this is insane. I can't imagine why somebody wouldn't jump right on this, you know, like Home Depot, Lowe's, anything else like that, because of how simplistic this is and that it should have already been implemented. That's how simple it is. All right, how do bugs get into your code? I have my theories. I was just curious how anybody else had theirs. I've previously done the computer bug thing before where I use Ethernet cables and actually turn them into tiny little insects, and I actually took a picture of one entering into an Ethernet port, so I thought that was kind of interesting and wanted to share because a lot of people thought it was funny. All right, next to last little thing that we got for you here in the GeekCruft section before we dive on into the food and caffeinated bits, Google was attacked by China and changes course. Now, this happened a little bit ago, and it's taken a little while to actually kind of masticate. It's taken a little while to actually kind of chew, work around, and figure out exactly what was what. Basically, there was a large-scale concerted effort to hack a series of accounts in Google China. These accounts all happened to be belonging to or relating to people who fighting for civil rights for the Chinese people. You know, these are Chinese nationals who are fighting for civil rights. The attacks all appeared to come from Taiwan, except upon further investigation, Google is pretty sure that they're actually, you know, due to the sophistication, due to the large scale of it, they're pretty sure they're actually coming from the Chinese government itself. Now, in 2000, and I think, I'm not sure if it was 2006 or 2000. Yeah, it was 2006. They actually launched Google.cn, and they worked with the Chinese government to actually censor some of the searches and say, you know, okay, we're going to operate within the boundaries of the laws that exist in your land. And a lot of people outside of China actually kind of slammed them about this. And I've heard things on both sides. I've actually heard people who are from China speak vehemently against people referring to things like the Great Wall or Great Firewall of China. They say, yes, there is a giant firewall, but anybody who wants to get something can by, you know, circumventing it very easily. The only problem is, it's like they there's a huge I can't really figure out the proper way to say this, but there's a huge chip on the people's shoulders who exist behind the firewall, who actually say, you know, that somehow Westerners think that they're less able digital citizens because they exist under this regime, and that, you know, somehow they need to be freed, and that somehow somebody needs to swoop in like some kind of savior figure. And I could really see their kind of disdain for that treatment. At the same point in time, as a company that goes in like Google, especially with their don't be evil slogan that they love to flout around, you kind of had a little sense of a slippery slope where it's like, okay, you're willing to censor searches. What else are you willing to do? Well, since they've actually been hit by China, or at least they can surmise that it's by China, they've actually determined to, or they're basically firing a salvo over the Chinese government's bow and taking the filters off. We've decided that we are no longer willing to continue censoring our results on Google CN. So over the next few weeks, we'll be discussing with the Chinese government the basis on which we can operate in an unfiltered search engine within the law, if at all. We recognize that this may well mean having to shut down Google.cn and potentially our offices in China. So Google, over this response and over the fact that they basically consider this is the last straw, they're willing to cease operations in the largest market on the planet. So this is kind of a huge deal. So it's going to be really weird to see where this goes from here. So I just want to kind of make you all aware of big things are afoot. Now, the next little article that we got for you here in the last article in the Geekcraft section is Chinese citizens are actually holding a memorial for Google. They pretty much have understood that the government's probably going to shut out the search giant. And, so they're starting to, on the company's logo in front of their building, they're actually putting flowers and wreaths and candles and all other kinds of strange things. And as if it were a gravestone, basically saying, you know, so long, nice to know you. So it's definitely going to be an interesting ride from here on out. And I, for one, really applaud Google's decision to stop filtering the search content. I don't want to, you know, be as naive as to think people need to be freed and there's all kinds of massive, you know, human rights violations that we need to charge over into different places and start righting the wrongs. You know, I think it's their country, and if they want to fix things, if they want to move things into a different direction, then the people will do it. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not they ask for help. If they do, then, you know, companies that are willing to do business in that area need to step up and say, okay, yeah, fine, you know. But at the same point in time, you can see that, you know, if the government doesn't want you operating there and they have the ability to keep you out, then they're going to either that or start arresting Google employees that are over there, and that's an untenable solution for the company as well. All right, now we're going to... Actually, I do have one more thing for the Geekcraft section here. There's a wonderful post over at dailycupoftech.com where it's actually a social media counter. It's Gary Hayes' social media accounts. It says, in the last 11 seconds, there have been X number of blog posts, members added on Facebook, money spent on virtual goods globally, tweets sent on Twitter, videos watched on YouTube, iPhone apps downloaded, money spent on Facebook gifts, hours uploaded onto YouTube, new Twitter users, text messages between avatars and Second Life, made from global messaging and data, user hours spent on Facebook. Like, it's a complete and continuing run-on sentence for finding all the different things that are happening and how much information and time is wasted and spent on social media. So you can actually choose social media, mobile, games. You can check now, the last day, the last week, the last month, and the last year. In the last year, just to let you know, in the last year, there have been over 330 million blog posts that were published and 221 million new members added to Facebook. So it's a huge number. So it's kind of interesting to see the continued thing. So I just wanted to share it because I thought it was funny. All right, moving right along. There's an interesting little design concept over at Ogizmo.com called a cornucopia personal food factory concept. And the idea behind this thing is that it's a design concept that has not as of yet actually come to pass. It's a way of making food through canisters, and all of your food will eventually come in tubes. As somebody who loves to cook, I mean, I really, really do love to cook, I would hate the day that everything comes in tubes. I mean, then you're completely removing the local produce, you're completely removing the local and the fresh fish and the fresh food that you can get. I mean, I live near Amish country. there's a very large and vibrant farmers market all around this area. So that would be a huge thing to lose. And I don't think food in tubes, unless you're on a spaceship, is a good idea. And in fact, that kind of brings to light the fact that since nobody really has any energy here after a certain period in time during the day, especially with the wife being pregnant and all that other stuff, we've taken to doing Iron Chef Sundays, which basically means I make all of the meals for the week during one massive long cooking session. Have like 7 or 8 pots going. I have things in the oven, and it's really actually kind of been cool. And at the same point in time, it's really kind of honed some of my cooking skills. And eventually, somewhere way down the line, I'd love to do a video podcast about cooking. I know that my skills in video editing are so horrible that it would be horrible at this point, and my skills in cooking are not yet quite up to the point where I'd like to show off. So, you might want to look for that down the road. All right, next little item we have for you here is one of the most expensive cups of coffee that I've ever heard. And I'd like to thank Mass from over at Coffee Hero for actually pointing to this. It's $90 for a taste of Intelligentsia coffee. This is a pretty big thing. The gentleman who actually runs cleanhotanddry.com actually was on his way through LA International Airport and had a 3-hour layover. So he took a 15-minute cab ride to Intelligentsia Venice, which is a cafe. That's $30. One shot of single origin Ethiopian Yigra Sheref. I can't pronounce it to save my life. $2.50. One cup of Kenyan, another unpronounceable region through a clover. That was $5. One shot of espresso for a lady he met while he was in line. She had never had a shot of espresso. It was $2.50 more. And then a cab ride back to the airport, which for some reason was $50. So this is $90 to try coffee at a well-known coffee house. My hat's off to the gentleman who did this, George. But wow, that's dedication. I don't have very much disposable income as it is. Two kids, wife, family. Car, dog, cats. But I don't think I could ever justify spending $90 for a cup of coffee, for several cups of coffee. But I would definitely love to have the freedom to do that. That's just an insane attempt to reach out and try new things. So hats off, but man, that's pretty interesting. Another article submitted by Mass, actually the caffeine poster. It's a poster over on Flickr where it compares coffee and caffeine drinks into two separate little things that they actually have up there. So there's two different scales based on the amount of caffeine from 0 to 300 milligrams. Basically, a Starbucks tall coffee has approximately 290, and a NOS energy drink, and then Jolt energy drink, and there's a whole bunch of other different ones up and down the chart. And it's kind of interesting to see. It's like where you line up. It's I like Red Bull, then Red Bull would be here. I don't actually like Red Bull. Red Bull tastes like cough syrup gone bad. But I'm all on the coffee side. So you can actually kind of check where you actually are. And apparently September 29th is National Coffee Day. That's on there as well. So wanted to pass it along to the group because I thought it was that awesome. Next little thing that we had for you here is actually a wonderful steampunk coffee machine that's kind of a little bit of a joke at the same point in time. If you head on over to therealbenbrown.com/newsbrews, there's an automatically playing video where it's basically an interactive telecommunications program. So it looks like a lovely large copper kettle with metal rivets and all other kinds of steampunk accoutrement on it. And the video goes on to explain that this News Brews actually takes a sampling of the World Wide Web and the information that's out there, and then combines it all into a distilled bit of coffee news for you. So it takes whatever news is popular in the planet, tries to pick a region or a varietal of coffee that would epitomize the news of the day, and then brews you a cup of coffee. I'm pretty sure a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek jokery, but the quality of the build is definitely kind of interesting. I would love to actually see something like this in person. It looks kind of fun to play around with. All right, and then the last little thing we have for you here is cold drip brewing with the coffee snob. I think this is pretty cool. It's actually the website's called thecoffeesnob.com. But this is a $99 cold drip coffee brewing system that actually, you know, has a ice up at the top. This definitely looks like something out of like a mad scientist's laboratory. But I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was that insane. Like, there's a giant vessel of ice up at the top. The ice slowly drips into a filtered area of coffee, which then goes down a cooling coil and into a carafe at the bottom. So all simple, all gravity based, but at the same point in time that much more interesting because it has a different design aesthetic than you would normally expect. So that about wraps it up here for Caffeination episode number 400. The next episode is going to be just as cool, just as fun. I highly suggest that you head on over there to www.caffination.com. That's caffeination.com. As always, all of the episodes are listed and lovingly nestled over there. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, can please feel free to send that over to caffeination@gmail.com. Thank you ever so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.